Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I, of course, am Paul Daner Jr. here with Joe Reedy. Joe, how are you doing?
Good, Paul. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic, but both of us are doing far worse than Geno Atkins today.
That's true, and you know, there's really only one theme song, Paul, that we can do, and this song is probably older than Geno Atkins, but
I think it is.
A little Johnny Gill, please.
Oh, Johnny Gill, take us away. Isn't he smooth?
Well, I showed you the video. He was smooth in the video.
Yeah, but we always seem to be breaking out awkward videos here. It wasn't too long ago we had other awkward 80s videos. This is just the latest in that line, but man, Johnny can bring it.
Yeah, not as awkward as a Kate Bush running up that hill hill video, which I think you're still traumatized by.
No, but Johnny Gill just got paid, and so did Geno Atkins. So in case you didn't know, Geno Atkins gets the 5-year, $55 million extension done, and he is the second highest paid defensive tackle behind Haloti Ngata's, second biggest deal for a defensive tackle behind Haloti Ngata's deal.
Second biggest extension for a defensive tackle. Also on average per year, he's now tied, I think, with Gerald McCoy at $11 million per the fine guys at Over the Cap.
Yes.
Who does that stuff. Nnamdi Kanu still tops an average per year.
Yeah.
But he's got a ton of escalators next year, so that deal might get renegotiated during this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, most people would say, okay, Geno Atkins, this is a no-brainer. That seems to be universally, across the board, worth every penny. This had to get done no matter how much he wanted. I guess the question is, it seems like both sides win because it's a huge deal, but it's not so outlandish where the Bengals are really getting hosed. I mean, this is a good deal on both sides. Geno got the money he deserved, and the Bengals really didn't overspend. It's probably about where value was for him.
Yeah, cap number's good. You know, anytime you're averaging $11 million per year, it's always nice. I always thought all along it was going to be in the 10 to 12 million category, and it hits right in the middle at 11. The important thing, though, Paul, is it got done.
Yeah.
And this was about 11:55 on the getting closer to midnight, for at least this year, on getting it done. And you don't want to do it in a regular season. You don't want that hanging over your head. Credit to the organization, credit to Atkins' agent, Pat Dye, who, you know, monitored everything and kind of was judging the cap and everything. And, you know, it behooved everyone to get it done. He's a top defensive tackle in the league. The money's deserved. Cap, it's spread out pretty nice. He's going to earn a lot of money the first 6 months of the deal. So he gets a lot of it early, which is good.
How much does he get in the first 6 months?
A whole lot of money.
Is it 22 in the first 6 months?
Yes.
Yeah, 22 right off the jump. Is this another one of those front-loaded contract situations that they the same thing as they basically did with Carlos, trying to give as much because they have the cap space right now to give that money and then worry later about it because you're going to have other contracts that are going to come in when the cap is going to be a little different. They're not going to have as much room to roll over.
I mean, no, the cap will probably go up in 2015 with the new TV money and stuff. 2014 flat, 2015 or 2016, we're going to start to see the jump. And things will start to free up a little bit, maybe not a lot, but judging by what we got coming around the bend. But it was one of those that you didn't want to go into February with this guy being possibly a free agent, which he wasn't going to be because they would have done the franchise tag, which would probably be around 9.2, 9.3. It was an $8.45 million for a defensive tackle this past year. Those things generally go up, so probably be around 9. You do the 120% rule in 2015. I think talking to some people, they figured if the tag money remained the same, you play the season out and get franchised 2014 and 15, $21 million. Over these 3 years, he's going to earn $31 million, so $10 million more. And it rewards the player, which is important in the locker room too, I think.
Yeah, it's huge. And that was one thing, you know, going around and talking to guys, there's so much respect for Geno and the way he, and I think because of the player that he is, a fourth-round pick that just outworked everybody and got the most out of his talent. He gets respect because of that, and he is the exact guy that Marvin Lewis and Mike Brown and everybody want to hold up in front of the team and say, if you be this guy, you will be the highest paid or amongst the highest paid players at your position. We will reward you. You will stay here. Your family will be set. And Geno is that guy to a T, and it really is the latest in a line of people that they have rewarded this way. Whether you look at Whitworth, Kyle Cook, Leon Hall, we're all amongst the last string. And even Andre Smith, Carlos Dunlap, in that mold of guys that they really believe in.
But, I mean, you even look at veterans this past offseason. Robert Gathers to get what he earned. Mm-hmm. Kevin Huber's going to make $14 million over 5 years. Is a punter. I mean, this team, and we had it in the paper today, the amount that they spent on veterans this offseason, total value of deals around $181 to $182 million. I mean, that speaks a lot. And when you go into free agency, you risk, you take gambles. Guys who they went out and got, they got James Harrison, who gives them that outside guy that they haven't had in a while. They got Alex Smith and Josh Johnson, who are used to this West Coast defense. But you can't keep replenishing via free agents. You got to do it in a draft and kind of gamble on your own guys.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because this team lost a lot of times by trying to put core players into their group via free agency. Intangible players, interchangeable players, you know, fun pieces to throw in. Yeah, that's good for free agency, but you have to develop and build your core by drafting and rewarding. And that system is more in place here than it ever has been in Cincinnati. That system of guys wanting to be here, wanting to stay here. These young players get drafted and they don't count down the days till they hit free agency and can go elsewhere. They count down the days until they can be rewarded with a chance to stay in Cincinnati. I mean, it's been a long time since people have really said that.
But I mean, here's the thing too, Paul. There's only so much money to go around on a team, and we face that with Michael Johnson now. You would love to keep him, but this ain't baseball.
Right.
Where you're flush with cash and you can do Brandon Phillips, Joey Votto, and all those guys and not have to worry about it. Michael Johnson's going to get paid next year. It will be with another team. Carlos Dunlap and Michael this year, that's what I like to call contract Thunderdome.
Yes.
Two agents enter, one contract's lowered, first to take the deal, wins, and Tina Turner sings We We don't want to be another hero as as you leave, and and your player, your client is parading you around Thunderdome on his shoulders. I mean, it happened this year with Josh Brown and Mike Nugent. Same thing, lower value. It's the reality of the deal. It happened in Pittsburgh, Antonio Brown and Mike Wallace.
Yeah.
You just can't keep going and waiting on that guy. I mean, hell, it happened here 2 years ago with Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph.
Yeah.
The exact same thing.
Although Mike Zimmer would have loved for both of those guys to still have been around, but essentially, that is how it ended up happening. If Joseph would have stayed.
Did it seem like Zim had a spring in his step today and a smile?
Oh,
and
he's just happy that this one didn't get away, because it's an absolute.
I mean, he wasn't going to get away next year, maybe 2015, but the fact that it's done.
Yes.
Both sides are amicable, and look at it this way. Going to be a hell of a closing in Hard Knocks, because Hard Knocks themes throughout the series have been contract holdouts, including Andre Smith 4 years ago, Darrell Revis 3 years ago, Larry Johnson 2008. For the perception of this franchise, how good is it going to be that somewhere in the last part of that episode is going to be one of your all-stars signing a contract extension?
For a lot of money. You're talking, the cameras were following around Gino with his piece of his envelope today as he went through and then eventually spoke to us and everybody else. But we kind of gauged some of the reaction in the locker room from different players about some of the things that we were talking about as far as getting it done early, that the mindset of players who are trying to get us in. Two players couldn't be any better to talk to you about this. Andrew Whitworth, who went through it, got it done. Leon Hall, who went through it, also got them. Both of those got those done before the season started. Really interesting from hearing from them, talking about how it got done, how important it was to get done when it did, and their reactions to Gino as a player. All that kind of put both of those two together. So listen to Leon Hall and then Andrew Whitworth here talking about the importance of Gino and this deal and all the surrounding elements of that.
2 years ago, you were kind of the first in this run of contract extensions. Just, what's it like now, kind of seeing that they're going the same path with Carlos and now Gino?
That's good. I mean, obviously, not only because there's a player like Gino, but I mean, you want to keep those core guys that have been around here for a little while. That's a big part of where we're trying to go. I think it's important to keep those kind of guys here.
For you, I mean, you kind of signed around the same time before going into the final year of your rookie deal and everything. How important for you was it to get it done?
It wasn't really for me as much important. Like if I didn't sign or something didn't work out and I went, you know, played the last year of my contract, I wouldn't have been bothered by that. But I was more concerned about getting it done before the first week and getting it over with. Like if we didn't come up with a deal, you know, before the first game, I would have kind of stopped talking to after the season, worry about it later. But it wasn't, you know, I mean, it was important to get it done early. But, I mean, if it didn't work out, I wouldn't have been, you know, too sad about it.
Ended up being extremely fortunate for you, though.
That is true. You know, obviously now that, you know, we can look back at it, it was definitely a very fortunate situation.
How much is it for me? If you're in a good environment like that, how much is it signing and knowing that everything's done and stable as compared to maybe the unknown of testing the market and playing it out?
Right, that's why it's, you know, the great thing about it. You know, obviously, you know, some guys choose to test the market, which, you know, some guys benefit from it, some don't. But I just think the unpredictability of it is a little unsettling for me, and I think for a lot of guys. So I think, you know, a lot of guys would prefer signing early than as opposed to hitting the market for the most part.
Do you look at Gino as a pretty remarkable story, considering where he was picked and how he's regarded and now how he's paid?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he wasn't, obviously compared to how he's playing now and compared to where he was drafted at, obviously it's a great story, but I mean, I'm sure, you know, like a lot of other guys, I mean, you know, the draft is what it is. I mean, it really doesn't matter where you picked, but he's one of those guys that kind of looked at it in that way. And, you know, since he's been here, he's slowly getting a lot better. In these last couple of years, he's took huge strides.
What's it like seeing this defense kind of evolve to the pass rush that it is now?
It's good. Feels real good. I mean, to see that, I don't know how many we have exactly, but, I mean, we got a first and a second group, I think, that can really get after the quarterback. I mean, we got a lot of athletic guys that we can put in different positions. So, obviously, that opens things up for Zimmer, you know, and ultimately opens it up for the DBs and, you know, the linebackers.
Are there times that you watch him on tape and go, holy cow?
Yeah, I do that a lot, actually. I mean, he's so strong. I mean, it's kind of – it's unbelievable. I mean, he's not very tall, but, I mean, he's just much stronger than a lot of people. That you know, that's what it seems like. He's just kind of overpowering. You know, he can really take control of, you know, that center, the center of the offense. You know, and I think we've all benefited from, you know, his success.
What do you think it means to young guys on this team when they see something like what happened with Geno, where somebody who was drafted here and developed here gets paid amongst the best in football and rewarded that way?
Well, I mean, I think you've seen that trend. I mean, here lately you've seen a trend of guys that have worked their way into that. And so, you know, I think that's something that continues to make this locker room special, is they see guys that actually put the work in and dedicate themselves to being better. And so, you know, with Domitai, myself, and Robert Gathers really was the starter of that. And then Domitai, myself, were right after that. And then Leon and Kyle and, you know, and Andre and Carlos and guys that have continued to apply themselves and reap reward from it. And so, you know, it's really a great thing. I mean, Gino's a great testament. I mean, the way he works, the attitude he goes about his job with. If every guy in this locker room can go about work that way, we'll be real successful.
Does that kind of add into what Marvin – I mean, the fact that front office would pay somebody like that, does that kind of back up when Marvin stands in front of you and says stuff like that, kind of reinforces?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know as much as that, as much as guys believe in the system. And that is the sense that guys believe that no matter where I was drafted, if I apply myself and put the work in, people will take notice. And Gino's a great testament of that. And the time he puts in the weight room and everything else, taking care of his body, you know, he does a great job of that. And so it's good for the young guys to see that, man, a guy who says, you know what, I'm not just here to exist or make the team. I want to be the best at what I do, and I'll apply myself that way. You know, it really puts a lot of, you know, promise to these guys' hearts that, hey, man, if I can push myself that way, I'll have that chance to be successful.
From a player standpoint, because 2 years ago you signed your extension a week before the season, how important is it to get it done before the regular season starts?
I think it's real important. I mean, just you have it off your mind and something you're not thinking about anymore, and now you can just go play football. Because sometimes, especially in a preseason scenario, it's tough to go through games that really don't mean a lot anyways, and that's really what you're thinking about and those kind of things. And so, you know, because it's a big deal. I mean, people say, hey, just play football, but, I mean, that's not realistic. You're talking about a big family. That right there is going to change Geno Atkins' entire family's life and his life. So it's a big deal, and so it's a tough thing to put in the back of your mind. So to get it over with, you know, I think I couldn't be more happy for anybody than Geno. And so it's great for him, and look forward to him having a great year.
I mean, Andrew Whitworth is always so strong, but such interesting concepts from him, what he was talking about as far as being a player and the importance of getting it. It is a big deal. Anybody that tells you otherwise is lying to you. It is a big deal to get this done before the season, because that really does weigh on you. And even playing in the preseason, it weighs you. I'm sure it was weighing on Geno a lot those 4 games, as he's saying, please don't get me hurt before I sign this deal.
Kind of feel like Joe Biden. It's a big bleeping deal.
Yes.
Yes. Here's the pen, Mr. President. This is a big bleeping deal.
Yes.
Looking back on those two deals, though, I think Witt had a year or two left in his. Leon can empathize more with Geno, because Leon was in the exact same situation. Last year of his deal, you want to stay. You really don't want to test the market. And Leon can speak about this more than anyone, too, because 10 weeks into that season, the Achilles happened.
Yeah.
And I think Leon still thanks his lucky stars every day they were able to get an extension done before that season, because
his money would have changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
with all the doubt that surrounded him throughout that offseason, that it would have been a huge blow to him.
Yeah, and he would have. You've got certain players that gamble and lose big time, and he would have lost big time because he probably would have ended up back here, but on a much lower deal. Mm-hmm. And if you like it here, because I remember talking to Leon about this a couple years ago and just talking to him about it today, he liked being here. And this was 2011 when you didn't know what the hell direction this team was going to be in.
Yeah.
You know, 1-3 preseason, people thinking Andrew Luck, Derby, the sky is falling, and Leon Witt and Kyle Cook all kind of said, you know what, it may be okay. And the organization started to go through past history and get this core locked up. So, you know, it's a good thing for everyone. We don't have to keep talking about it. We don't have to keep doing the countdowns. Kind of had a quiet confidence this thing was going to get done before the season, but now that it is, we can now start concentrating on March of 2014 when...
Because it all starts with who's next. And who's next is AJ Green, and he is going to be getting mega, mega deal.
In fact, I talked to AJ Green's agent today, and here is his contract strategy going into March next year.
Stewie, hey.
Hey there. So, it's been 24 hours. Got my money?
Oh, you know what? Just give me till next Friday. I'll have it for you.
Oh, that's funny. I could have sworn I said have it today.
Yeah, I don't have it. Sorry.
Oh, well, all right then. That's good, OJ. Yeah, that hurt? That hurt?
What the hell?
Yeah, it feels so good, does it? No, huh? Yeah, that's what happens, man.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, that's what happens. Where's my money? You gonna give me my money? Where's my money, man? Where's the money? Yeah, you like that? That feel good? That feel good? Where's the money, man? Where's my money? You got till 5 o'clock. You hear me? You got till 5 o'clock.
You freaking psychopath!
Clean yourself up.
Okay, it gets awkward at the end almost. It's just the beatdown that continues to go on. Although I do like clean yourself up. What a great ending line. You almost have to have the accompanying video from Family Guy to truly appreciate the Stewie beatdown. But that is exactly how AJ Green's agency plans on it going in, because he's going to get whatever money it is.
We're talking Calvin Johnson stratosphere.
Yeah.
In fact, AJ and Calvin trained together during the offseason, and They can start comparing money and all that
very soon.
It's gonna be in that stratosphere.
An interesting correlation between Detroit actually and Cincinnati, if you look at it, because Detroit, with the huge amount of money they paid Sue and also paid Calvin Johnson, the cap number on them, those two this year, $28.9 million. This could end up in about that area when you look at the big years of what both those contracts will be, with Geno around 11 and AJ being somewhere in that 15 to where Calvin is about 18.
Yeah.
He'll be up there in that area. I mean, you're looking at the possibility of those two players alone taking up that kind of money. And that's why we've seen so much front loading of contract and so much cap space they're leaving available, because that is part of the plan. And Marvin was even talking about that today, about, you know, people ask me all the time about why we have so much cap space. Well, it's part of a bigger plan where you have to plan 2, 3, 4 years ahead to make sure you have enough to take care of people that are the absolute core, and that is clearly AJ Green and Geno Atkins going forward. And so that will be the next contract to look out for, but we have plenty of time to discuss that once next
offseason.
Well,
we also
comes.
You know, Jermaine Gresham's heading into the last year of his deal too. Mm-hmm. And that'll be interesting to see how that extension kind of goes, or does Jermaine kind of go, I'm going to play this out and see how it goes. Because the thing is, when we start talking Green and Dalton, those are now the first contracts under the new CBA where you are slotted into those salaries. So these second contracts, it is going to be extremely interesting to see how agents approach that.
How will it be different? Well, yeah, just because there's more at stake.
Well, if you were a first round draft pick before this, AJ Green probably would have had a $55, $60 million deal as a draft pick. Mm-hmm. And then it goes, do you go for the same money? Do you go slightly higher? These 2010s now are going to start cycling through toward the end of theirs where you, now you go, okay, what does this mean for them? And, you know, the salary distribution becomes maybe a little bit better.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole new world, and you're right. We're going to have so much time to talk about this. It's almost hard to get into it all, but is that all strictly depending on this year if they decide to try and give Andy the long-term extension, or is it pretty inevitable that that's going to happen next offseason?
Or does Andy decide that he's going to be like Joe Flacco and play it out?
Yeah.
I mean,
talk about the risk reward to play that with other players. Well, he hit the jackpot.
Yeah, it takes two sides to reach a deal, Paul, and takes two sides to deal. And there's always one side that wants to get it done, and the other side that goes, "Should we do this or not?" And it depends on fair market value. I think starting next year, the Kaepernick negotiations are going to be interesting to watch. A couple spots below Andy. Kaepernick's already been to a Super Bowl. How much money does he get as a second round draft pick, and where does it go from there?
Yeah, and a lot of that will depend on what the Bengals end up doing this season, because if they make a run, there's going to be a lot of people with their hands out, because there's going to be a lot of people that contributed. But so we've talked quite a bit about money, and we'll have plenty of time to do that next offseason. But there was plenty other going on this past weekend. We saw all the cuts finally came down, so we can stop playing Rosterology, although we love the theme song. Let's bring it back. Yeah, let's bring it back one more time, just because we love it. Let's talk about the final episode of Rosterology.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. British polka never really gets old. And we almost have to come up with something in season that we do.
I'm kind of thinking Know Your Opponent.
Know Your Opponent can bring this. Yeah, you're right. We can come up with plenty of different reasons to do it. We'll keep playing the music. God, I love that BBC. So we had the Rosterology played out. I guess we'll start with some of the big battles everyone was watching. Rex Burkhead ends up staying. Dan Heron on the practice squad now. Orson Charles ends up being the man at H-back / fullback. John Connor ends up being terminated. And let's see, defensively, we saw all three safeties that were in the competition end up being kept. Went with five corners instead of six and five safeties. So Sean Prater ends up being amongst those that's lost. He gets put on the 53-man, actually, over in Philadelphia. Any surprises for you?
I think the fact that in the end they did go with Charles over Connor. I thought they might have kept both, and Alex Smith might have been on his way out, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen that way. Five linebackers instead of six, a little bit of a surprise, but. And I know there were a lot of fans upset that J.K. Schaefer got cut and is now back on the practice squad and everything, but Rocky Boyman and I had this conversation on Twitter Saturday night. Is it better to cut him now, or he's on for 24-48 before that first game against Chicago, and all of a sudden, no, you're cut.
Yeah.
And probably better to do it now. I think the way it's trending, they kept the seven wideouts. Andrew Hawkins will go on IR designation to return. We hope. I still think the Whitworth thing, who knows?
Yeah. You think there's a chance that Whitworth could be the guy that goes.
Small chance, but
yeah, a chance.
Extremely cloudy for Sunday as far as him playing, just to read that I'm getting in vibes.
Yeah. But if Hawkins were to be the one to go on the IR with designated return, which that would seem to be the way they want to go, with
bring
the fact
me a linebacker.
Seven, then it becomes linebacker time. And that's why they have the five.
Right.
So then you have six and six, and you're back to a more normal setup.
And maybe that's a return of Mr. 53, which
yep.
Thomas Howard, great guy and everything. Hopefully the knee is a lot better. We're all hoping that. He had his last visit to a team in March in Miami, which did not go well. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he wasn't in a camp, I don't like that. But right. if you need him in just nickel packages, maybe you can bring him in that way. But and he's certainly familiar with the scheme. So.
Right. I mean, he was great here. He knows Zimmer. He knows the scheme. If he's playing limited snaps, or if you're just keeping him as a guy who you have as a contingency plan on your inactive, and you give him another month or two to continue to recover from that ACL, maybe then he's much more viable of an option there as an in-case guy. They have to do something, obviously, because yeah. they're very weak at backup at that position. But more on some of the offensive guys. I had some time to talk with Jay Gruden while everyone else was slurping up the Geno Atkins story today. And Jay and I were discussing some of the cuts, what he liked about some of the guys, and some of the things he's looking at going into Chicago week. So here's me and Jay Gruden today.
You guys have Rex still here. What did Rex bring you guys this camp and the preseason that you liked so much?
Well, I think showed a lot of quickness, obviously, from the position, but also his quick knowledge and ability to pick up the offense mentally. And then physically, he can do it all. You know, he can catch the ball in the backfield. He can obviously run. And he did a nice job of protection. So, really, he was a jack of all trades and pretty good at all of them. You know, he really didn't have a glaring weakness where he has trouble doing this. He was pretty solid at everything. So I think he's a guy with a lot of talent and a huge amount of upside. He's going to get better and better.
Is that one of the biggest reasons of versatility? Is that one of the things you need out of a guy who's going to be at that point in your running back depth chart, asking him to do it all?
You know, the thing with him, though, is you saw what he did in 4th-and-1 the other night. Against who the hell we play, Indianapolis. You know, there's no hole there, but he ran right over the guy and got 2 yards. And one of the best 2 yard runs we've had around here in a while. So, you know, so he's shown that power, and he's obviously shown the ability to catch the ball in the backfield, and he's got good quickness. So versatility is very, very important. If you're going to be not a number one back, number one running back, then you got to be able to do a little bit of varying, special teams included.
Yeah.
He's doing that.
Well, you're talking about versatility. Orson, I mean, he's here because of that, really, because of that versatility. How much can you use him where, you know, I was just thinking about the other day, you could go out there and be in a goal line set and then suddenly be spread with 3-4 tight ends, and if you count Orson in there, where you can, you're the versatility there. Was that really what put him over the top, Leonard, pretty much?
I think more so is, I guess, long-term ability to get better. I think there's a projection there that hey, this guy can get better at fullback. He can still play tight end, and he's going to get, you know, he's going to learn the system a little bit more and more every game and every week and every year. And I think he's more of a projection type player as far as not so much I'm already there type guy.
Yeah.
He still has some improvement to do both physically and mentally. But he is versatile, and he can play tight end and fullback. The problem is when you put him in a fullback, then somebody's coming out.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
And
the more personnel sets we have, the better.
Are you hesitant with him then at this point? In that, if it were a situation to put him in a big spot, we're in a blocking mode right now? Or?
I wouldn't say hesitant. I just think he may have, No, I'm not hesitant at all. You know, that personnel group, he's the fullback.
You know
what I mean? It's just when we go two tight ends, two receivers, you know, it's right now it's he's number four as far as tight ends go. But he's the number one fullback, so goal line, short yardage, regular personnel, he's the guy.
Yeah.
So he's got we're counting on him to do well.
He just needs to show improvement in the blocking area in general. That's part of his projection.
Which he did, that's why, and that's why he stayed, because he did show improvement from day one to now. You know what I mean? So he's still got a little ways to go. As does everybody else. We all can improve, but he's doing a great job with them and teaching them. And the good thing about Orson is he's trying.
Yeah. We talk about Ryan Whalen all the time, but he's here because he just does everything right. You know, how valuable is a guy like that who you know no matter what the situation, no matter where he's thrown into, that he can go out there and do exactly what you guys are asking for?
That's important. You know, if it's close from a matter of athletic ability, you always want to keep the guy that is dependable and will do the right thing and knows more than one position. And that's what Ryan gives you. He can play X, Zebra, or Y, or X, Zebra, or Z. You know, that's all three positions out there. And he can play special teams. He's helping there on three special teams. And, and he's tough, and he'll block. He'll go in there and block the safeties. He'll go out, block the corners, whatever he's got to do. So there's a great comfort level that Andy has with him, that I have with him, James has with him. He's great for the room in there because of how hard he works. People see that and kind of say this is a standard, and he set a high standard for that room.
Is he one of those people that you kind of stand on the table for?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll stand on the table for Ryan any day of the week.
Yeah.
I wouldn't blink if he was out on the field for 50 snaps, 100 snaps, or 2 snaps.
Yeah.
I know that he'll do the right thing.
Yeah. I know Tyler said he's fine, and he's not playing the last two games. You're not worried about it, but, you know, would you like to get him some more reps?
He's still a rookie. You know,
yeah.
He needs the reps. You know, it is a concern. Rookies make rookie mistakes, and we have to do our best to make sure we minimize those mistakes. You know, it might just be being too quick on the route or not deep enough or whatever. Your footwork right on this play. You know what I mean? There's so many fundamental things that goes on in that position, both in the passing game and the running game, that he missed some valuable time. And we'll see how he does, but we know from a talent standpoint he's very talented, but the mental part of it has come easy for him, but we'll see in a game situation.
Do you feel like you have to kind of put kid gloves on him at first because he didn't get all those reps? He's too big a part of the game plan. We got to put this
anybody who plays in this game against Chicago, their gloves are off.
There's
a brawl, and you got to know what to do, and that's kind of why the guys we kept are here, because they all have a pretty good understanding of what we're doing. If you weren't consistent mentally, then I really wouldn't feel comfortable going to Chicago with you. So all these guys here have done a good job. Just a matter of getting out there on game day.
Yeah.
You know, fans going crazy with the crowd noise, the speed of the game in Chicago. I mean, Chicago defense plays faster than any defense in the NFL. So we'll see how they adjust.
Very saddened for Jay that he's now fifth on the all-time Louisville touchdown list.
Passed by Teddy Bridgewater after Teddy Bridgewater just stuck it to my alma mater, my Bobcats.
Heisman.
Yeah, let me just tell you, as an OU alum who took part in the Brian Knorr era, I've seen many tilts that they go down 21-0 in the first quarter and a half. I didn't need to watch the rest of that. I pretty much had seen it. I know how this goes. And it went, they ended up losing 49-7. Poor Jay. Poor Jay passed by Teddy Bridgewater on the all-time career touchdowns. But
Teddy will catch him on yards soon.
Yes, so. There'll be plenty more opportunities for me to talk to Jay about what happened at Louisville. One interesting thing I thought that he was saying, talking about Orson Charles, was pretty blatantly said that he was kept because it's a project. It almost made it sound like we are going to see very few snaps where Orson Charles is on. Now, last year, the fullback position only was
20%.
20%, and it was not a high number, and you figured that would be less considering all the two tight end sets you're going to see this year. I mean, that seems like it's going to be significantly less with Charles, because like he was saying, when you take Charles and you want to put him in there, somebody's got to come out, and that's somebody who is really good, whether it be Gresham or Eifert or a slot guy or whatever, Marvin Jones. There's a number of players you'd like to have there in the red zone or whatever the situation is, and it's interesting. I mean, I think it really did show that the offensive philosophy was the reason that this decision was made, is they're just not going to be a fullback-type team. And, you know, we saw what happened last time they tried this in 2010. Granted, that was under Bob Rutkowski in a different system. We'll see if Jay knows how to handle that better, where you're rarely using a fullback. And maybe this setup, because of the way they are at tight end, will make it better. But it's going to be very interesting to see if it comes back to bite him and if Chris Presley will be looked at as a savior when he shows up in Week 7.
And at least it's a six-week tryout.
Right.
Let's put it that way. And I think John Connor is still on the street last time we checked. Because you can still, you know, we don't wish ill will on anybody, but, you know, if you're going with project over known, who knows how much Alex Smith is here. So,
right.
I mean, it all becomes a different chess piece as far as that. I still think back to 2010 without a conventional fullback. I think it just bit them way too many times.
Right.
And I'm nervous. I'm just nervous about that run game. It led the league in average yards per game this preseason. You can see they put a greater emphasis on the run. If you do that, why do you get rid of your fullback?
Man, I mean, you do wonder how much the interesting that would be an interesting snap count to look at is how many snaps were, you know, they even use the fullback. I mean, you think with Eifert and Gresham out there so much that that's going to be their standard base. It's going to be with Sanu, Green, Eifert, Gresham, and then whatever their halfback, whether it be Benny or Gio.
Eifert's going to be interesting to watch here the first couple weeks, too, because he didn't have a great preseason.
No.
Eight preseason games.
The games, yeah.
Looked great in training camp, but that was against your own team.
Mm-hmm.
In the games, he really didn't do that well and missed the last two.
Yeah. And Jay even calling that a concern when I talked to him, saying, hey, he needed those reps. I mean, yeah, he looks great. He has all the talent. He's been great in practice, but we cannot afford rookie mistakes, was his point. And, you know, that's definitely a concern for them because he's such a big part of their game plan, and he just doesn't have a lot of work at it out there.
I have a bigger concern about Eifert, though. Did you see the photos from Saturday's Notre Dame game?
I did not.
He's on the sidelines with an Ocho Cinco 2 t-shirt.
Oh, no. Nobody wants that.
Nobody.
Well,
which actually would be Ocho Cinco 3 because Armand Benz wore 85 here for a while.
Yes, technically. You're exactly right. Let's just hope that it does not turn. We don't have to see a opposing linebacker list where he checks off if he beat them or not. And although he probably wouldn't mind some of the endorsements that came along with some of that. So Chicago, we're finally talking about real football by real players on a real football field. It's going to be fantastic. Soldier Field with the
but it's something called Soldier Field. The colonnades are hidden and
yeah.
It looks like a spaceship and
yeah.
It's you know it's not old time Soldier Field. It's not with the fog rolling in and
well, there still could be fog. It's not just because there's a spaceship on top doesn't mean there's not going to be fog. I still think there's a good chance of fog. Although it is early in the year. That's more of a later in the year. But if anybody who's ever been in Chicago knows, fog can show up just about any single point in time. But the real question is, where are we going to be eating on Saturday night? Because, you know, some Chicago-style deep dish could be in order. I'm thinking, because the king of the road restaurant rankings depend upon whatever is going to happen on Saturday.
I mean, Ditka's, I'm kind of...
I know you've been really pushing Ditka's.
Because the coach is there most nights. Now, he might be in Bristol for ESPN, but remember there 4 years ago, had a nice dinner at Ditka's. Coach was there, got to meet my dad, got photos taken and all that.
How about that?
Where he called Chad at the time, Ocho Stinko, when he knew who I worked for and stuff. But it's almost like a football museum. And the steaks are very tasty, too.
Yeah.
But you know, going to be a lot of interesting choices this year.
I'm pushing. I'm officially on the record on the Lou Malnati's wagon. That I'm saying we got to go Chicago style deep dish, and that is premier, just fantastic stuff. And of course, I will. You know, regardless of where we eat, when you're eating in Chicago, you're going to feel real fat afterwards because they just do it right. It's just
PHAT.
Yes, that's maybe I'm gonna feel FAT. I'm pretty sure. Well, but after we eat, so Sunday we've got the game. You got the first game of a 16 game season where the Bengals are everyone's favorite little pony. Everybody's on the Bengals. The bandwagon is full, and Marvin's the conductor, and he's pulling the horn. Toot toot. Here we go. All aboard. People are saying Super Bowl. Everybody is on the Bengals. Now, people can look for our special section on Friday that will come out, and we'll have just truckloads of information for you. But amongst all of this stuff, we'll see, will be the season prediction from you, Joe. So, what do you say? Well, give a sneak peek to we got to give our podcast people some love, a sneak peek into what they'll read on Friday. What's the prediction for the season?
11-5, losing in Denver in the AFC Championship game.
Ooh. So you don't think they've got enough to get over the top to the Super Bowl?
I don't see it yet.
Yeah.
And we do remember last year I picked 10-6 in back-to-back playoff trips, so I did hit on that one.
Thanks to that late run.
Yes. Oh.
Didn't look good at 3-5.
No, it didn't. No, it really didn't. Yeah, I do love fans who, after 5-6 weeks, are you going to change your pick? No, I made it in September.
That's what it is.
It is what it is,
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
Yeah.
But they got to win a playoff game first.
Yeah.
And there's still enough of a core here that, you know, maybe next year. But, you know, Super Bowl in New York, too. I mean, Bengals fans are used to cold weather from Detroit and stuff. But the first cold weather Super Bowl, Marvin talked about kind of, I want to take that important photo in January during media day. That's not going to be in the stadium.
No.
It's going to be so friggin' cold there that media day this year is in the Prudential Center in Newark.
Beautiful New Jersey.
Ugh.
Yes.
The home of the New Jersey Devils, which you want mother of all ironies about this, Paul?
Yes.
The next night there's going to be outdoor hockey at Yankee Stadium. So it's like we got an indoor media day.
And then, but I mean, this will be the weirdest of Super Bowls. I mean, people will be tracking the Nor'easters to see what ends up coming to Clip, New Jersey. I mean, it could be just...
You've seen Farmer's Almanac. They're already predicting Armageddon.
The Farmer's Almanac. I mean, I'm just glad the Farmer's Almanac is back in just pop culture again. I mean, I feel like it's probably been a good 25 to 30 years since anyone has ever even cracked that thing open. But the Farmer's Almanac said, if it's going to snow, the Bengals would have to like their chances being there, you know, as an outdoor weather team that maybe they played a few games in January to get there at home. They'll see what's going to happen. I will say I'm with you in a little bit of ways. I think that they win the North. I have a feeling that they don't win a playoff game, though.
Wow.
I think they catch a hot wild card team that comes and beats them. Until this staff, until this core proves that it can win a playoff game and really beat a team that they have to beat when both sides play well, I don't know that we've seen that. The biggest win of this regime would be considered that Pittsburgh win last year. And Pittsburgh didn't play particularly well in that game. Now, part of that was to, you know, the Bengals' defense. But, I mean, there was a lot of mistakes made in that game. And I don't know.
Still won on the road, though.
Did we, not taking anything away from that win at all? But I have to see it before I would pick them to win a playoff game. I think, but on the same side there, if they win one, I think they go to the Super Bowl. I think they just need that one out of the way to be able to play loose and play with the talent that they have. Of course, I'm sure we will both be proven completely wrong, like everybody that makes predictions is, but they have as good a chance as anybody. And in this league, if you're in the conversation every year, then you're doing something right. And that's where they're at right now. So they've got to be pretty happy about that. And as long as they have Geno Atkins, they'll be okay for a little while.
Because he is a man and a half.
He is a man and a half. And anybody that hasn't heard this, we have to play this for you.
Yes.
It is too good. It is from after the Pittsburgh win last year. And Dave Lapham, our good friend who Mr. Bengal, we love from 700, in the locker room afterwards, as anybody that's ever listened to Lap in the locker room, it is a must listen. Going around, trying to find players, talking to whoever's in his way, and just being every guy would want to be there trying to, after a win or a loss. And he was trying to find Geno Atkins after Geno just dominated, and this is what part of what ended up happening.
Geno Atkins. Da. Geno Atkins. He's a man and a half.
Can we give it to the Bengals scoreboard people so they can play it every time Geno gets a sack?
That would be something.
Yeah, just fantastic moment with Lap. I remember listening to that live and instantly calling the station, and Lindsey Patterson over there is like, please tell me I can get audio of that. That was too good. Lap sings the hits.
A part of the cast of Behind the Stripes with Paul Daugherty.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, behind this, next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, the big show starts. In case you haven't heard,
we're seeing the advertisements.
That's right. It's they were out in the paper this weekend and are circulating online. Behind the Stripes, our big show that will be happening at Moore Line House at 7 o'clock every Tuesday this season. Hopefully, is going to be taking place. You can come down. You can hang out. It's Doc, of course, myself, Joe Reedy, Lindsey Patterson, collection of others. Bengals will be involved. A number of different guests. An hour of us talking about Bengals and their lives, and really just anything that's really happening surrounding the team. And it should be pretty fun. And at the very least, come down, have a little pop down at Moore Line, and have a drink, and you know,
just don't throw it on me.
No, just be nice to Joe, even if he blocked you on Twitter. Just be nice. You don't need to throw anything on. I mean, there's got to be a chance that's going to happen.
Oh yeah, there's. It's always a chance I could get run over too, Paul. I mean, these
things. Are we going to have to quarantine you from the rest of the audience? Like, or we have to be like College Game Day when they have to put the big net up behind us so the people can't throw things at Fowler and Corso and Herbie? That's good. We're going to need a reedy net that we just put up behind you whenever you go up on stage so people can't throw things at you.
That would be fun.
It would be. It might be necessary. We'll see if it's up by week two or three. So make sure you check that show out on Tuesdays. Of course, the podcast coming to you every single Tuesday. Everything up on the blog, Cincinnati.com. Special section coming out on Friday. And we will have you covered from Chicago on Sunday for the season opener. Thank goodness the regular season is finally here.
Yes, but kind of in a 360-degree view, Paul. Let's take it out with the theme of kind of this week in honor of Geno Atkins.
Should we?
We should.
Go a little money?
A little money.
A little money. All right. With a little bit of money, we take you out of here. We wish we had more of it, but Geno's holding it all. So have a good one. We'll see you next week on Scribe Session.
Have a good night, everybody.